Mini episode 1749 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this mini episode of the FDH Lounge, previewing the 2024 AFC North. We are working our way through the NFL division by division. And what that means, of course, is one of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries, in fact, an original FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, joining me here today as he does for all of these. And we're going through the AFC North, which I think by dint of living on America's North Coast, Chris Galloway, safe to say, is the one that we see up close and personal the very most out of the eight divisions.
Up close and personal and nothing but grudges.
Yes, yes. Everybody hates each other. It makes it very, very interesting every year.
Absolutely.
No question. Yes.
Absolutely. We hate everyone in this division. We're all kissing cousins. There's incestuous relationships like Paul Brown leaves Cleveland and founds the Bengals, and the Baltimore steals the Browns and becomes the Ravens, and Pittsburgh's just awful, so everybody hates them. I mean, it's a hell of a division. It's a real division. It is hard scrabble cities with old school football. And real fans who, and other than the Bengals, who really, really live and die by their team.
It's hilarious that you said all of that, Chris, because our next division as we go in order is going to be the AFC South, and you won't be applying a single word of what you just said there to that division.
No, I call that to me is the XFL division of the AFC. It's people are like, oh, there's football. Yeah, that's cool.
Pretty much, yes. But
It's new, it's fake.
Yeah.
It feels, feels artificial. There's no grit.
Yeah.
AFC South always makes me, it always makes me a little, it's like tepid warm water on a hot day. It's
yes.
Like, whatever.
Very much so. Versus in the AFC North, the only new car smell you get here is the kind that somebody is buying down at the local Marks and popping in the thing in the form of a deodorizer in the car. And, of course, those don't work.
That's right.
That's
the AFC North, the pine tree from the mirror of air fresheners. That's us.
Yes, and as somebody that used to have it, the dice nuts things here, over the mirror, I used to have those back in the day. This is a division that kind of embodies that as well.
The IROC-Z of divisions.
Yes, pretty much
and
so.
As the Beastie Boys sang, I got the trees on my mirror so my car don't smell.
And if you didn't have that and you're in an AFC North city, your car probably will smell, no doubt about it. And while we're at it, too, as far as, entities stealing away from other entities here in this division, of course, a little bit of an under-the-radar thing as far as the national media goes, but Patrick Queen leaving Baltimore for Pittsburgh. You don't see those type of moves. Clear that Ozzie Newsom doesn't work here anymore, in Baltimore, when you've got things like that happening. But here's what we've got for the AFC North as far as I got these teams in the projected order of finish per Fantasy Football Draftology 2024, available on the main page of FantasyDraftHelp.com. This is one run-on sentence for each team in there. The AFC is on page 17. The NFC is on page 18. You can go check those out. And again, if you want our macro notes for the season, and it was a small list because, as we said, not a lot of big turnover in the offseason, go to the first in this series, the AFC East, at mini episode 1748. But here goes for the AFC North. Cincinnati It's shocking how many pundits are sleeping on a Super Bowl favorite from a year ago, considering how they overachieved in Joe Burrow's absence, and considering that they don't have many creators on the roster, albeit the running game could be a bit weaker than it was even with a diminished Joe Mixon last year. Cleveland. Last year bore out our belief that this team had less holes than most teams in the league, and the bench depth was better than expected since the team weathered a wave of injuries to make the playoffs. But the team is going to live or die by Deshaun Watson's ability to stay out of trouble, stay healthy, and prove that he's still on par with the dominant quarterback of his Houston years. Baltimore. The offensive line may not be up to usual Ravens standards. The wide receiver depth is questionable, and the back seven has some holes, rendering this team further away from a Super Bowl trip than their AFC Championship appearance would have you believe. Pittsburgh. Picking up both Russell Wilson and Justin Fields was a head-scratcher, and a bigger head-scratcher was not picking up Fields' fifth-year option, meaning that he seems to have one foot out the door already since he won't be starting, at least initially, and need not take a back seat to this version of Wilson. But the team at least solved their crappy quarterback situation and actually did the best job that they have done in the better part of a decade in filling their starting 22. So that's how I have the AFC North shaking out, Chris, and I know you're going to have some very strong thoughts on all of this.
Boy, do I. I got to tell you, this division is going to surprise a little bit. I see this division taking a step backwards. Mm-hmm. Last year, the number one division in football, and it wasn't even close. It truly was.
Right.
I don't see that being the case this year. I have the Bengals winning the division because, like you said, and again, that's predicated on Joe Burrow staying healthy.
Yes.
I think he does. I think we're owed a season of Joe Burrow playing most of the season, you know, maybe misses a game because of a, you know, turf toe or something weird. But I think, you know, based on his patterns, we're going to get a season of Joe Burrow, and that, more than anything, will propel the Bengals to the top of the division with a 12-5 record. Not a great team, but the ability to win in a quarterback-driven league. Offensive line should be stable. You know, you've got some question marks there, like you said, in the run game and the tight ends. They've lost a little bit on defense, but I think they're going to be good enough to push through with 12 wins, maybe 11. Again, the AFC North is facing the toughest schedules, by and large, in all of football. So that might pull back their overall records a little bit. In second place, I have the Ravens. I've got them at 10-7. I agree with you. They've got some issues. They're a little thinner in the back in the DBs. They're a little they lost Patrick Queen at linebacker. They've got some question marks on offensive line and at wide receiver. So they didn't really get better. And your analysis is correct. So, again, another team I see taking a step backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I have them finishing second in the division. They will still make the playoffs. But that is predicated on their quarterback staying healthy. He goes down, they're toast. I have the Browns. I wanted to believe this year could be special for the Browns. But I started off the offseason feeling about really good about where this team was going. I thought they had a decent draft. Off-field stuff aside, I liked the Mike Hall pick. I loved the Zach Zinter pick in round 3. I think those guys could be building blocks for the future on both lines. I loved Andrew Berry going, you know, line and line on those first two picks. Very underrated. But again, they're rookies. You're only going to get so much out of them. And, you know, Mike Hall, his biggest challenge is honestly just going to be staying in the league and out of jail. He came out of Ohio State, and the card on him was character issues, locker room problem, right? And what are we already seeing? Character issues, potential locker room problem.
We're not seeing tough, smart, and accountable. And when you say he's doing fine aside from off field, I say, other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the reality is in practice, preseason, etc., he's looked really good, right? But to the point we're both making, his problem is always going to be, you know, that he's a knucklehead.
Yeah.
And he was clearly a problem at Ohio State, and they did a nice job of managing that, covering all that up, and covering up for him and his problems. So, again, I have no faith that, you know, he'll even be with his team come next year, because God only knows he'll do something else stupid. So I started off feeling good about the Browns offseason because it was quiet, right? We had good reports on Nick Chubb. We had a decent draft. We had some, you know, locking some guys down in contracts long term. And it really started off the offseason quiet, solid, felt good. And I thought, okay, this is the kind of offseason the Browns needed to have, right? Stable, moving forward, adjusting the offense. But now, as I'm looking at it as we've gone through camp and the preseason, I have this sort of sinking feeling, right? And a couple of media members have actually recently, in the last couple of days, said exactly how I had been feeling, which is, it's been a weird camp for them, right? It's almost like there's something off, some disconnect between coaching and players. They've looked terrible in the joint practices. They've looked awful in the preseason games. They don't look ready to start week one at all. This team does not seem ready. We have injury issues with starters. We have a quarterback who doesn't look like he's going to play a snap in preseason at this rate. I'm actually prepared to just say the Deshaun Watson thing is, you know, as much as it pains me, I think he's just a shell of who he used to be. I think he's just toast. You're not getting that guy from Houston ever again. And I think that's why they brought in Jameis Winston and why they keep working so hard to develop Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Because I think they know they're going to go this year with Watson, and whether he's on the roster and they're playing him or whatnot, I have a feeling that this guy is not our quarterback next year. Maybe he's on the roster and they're paying him. But I just think mentally, Watson at this point is just a fragile snowflake mentally. I think mentally he's washed, and this is a mental game for quarterbacks. I think his confidence is gone. I think he's a guy who is shaken by the fact that the whole world knows something awful about him, and he cares too much about what people think. I just think he's done, and it translates into how he's able to play the game. So for the Browns, it's a failed experiment. They gave up a lot to get the guy they were hoping to get, the guy that was looking like a future Hall of Famer in Houston, and they're getting nothing of the sort. So I no longer believe in Watson. I had hoped that he could return to form. I don't believe it'll happen. I think also for the Browns, the offensive line is looking shaky, and I expect them to take a step back, because they don't have the taskmaster in Callahan whipping them into shape. I think they have a good offensive line coach now, but I think he's a player's coach. And I think these players have since got used to sort of the drill sergeant taskmaster approach, and they're going to react like spoiled humans do when that's gone. The pendulum will swing too far. They're not. I feel like this line is going to kind of fall apart.
Okay.
Nick Chubb is not, we're going to miss him. I mean, he might play week one. I don't know. Probably not. But I would expect Nick Chubb back early in the season because he's a machine.
Sure.
But I don't think that he's, I don't think we can expect a lot there. And other than Amari Cooper as a wide receiver and David Njoku, we don't really have downfield weapons. So I've reached a point where I'm like, I started off the offseason thinking the Browns could surge, and I'm thinking they're actually going to wilt.
Okay.
And so my prediction on the Browns is 8-9. They are playing the toughest schedule in the league, and I think that's just an impossible position.
Wow. I mean, that's a clip and save right there. Interesting that I, who have been emotionally divorced from this team since Watson got there, and I'm not going to say anything to rub it in on any of the stuff that you said there, but I actually got them at 10-7 and as a wild card team, but that's a thing where I actually think that they're going to be shown to be a pathetic joke if they do wilt back to 8-9 because theoretically there are a number of things that they are supposed to have going in their favor. The one thing with Watson, too, that nobody is really talking about that much. I mean, some of the inside folks are talking about it a bit, but I mean, this deal that he's coming back with the specific type of shoulder injury ain't a whole lot of precedence for seeing how guys are going to come back from something like that. So that's not something you're going to love either.
No, I mean, I think we've already seen that he's in camp. He's limiting his throwing still. When he has thrown, he's looked okay. But we even saw yesterday he pulled back and didn't finish practice because of shoulder soreness.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at that and I'm going, so he's still not 100%.
Yeah.
So to your point, I feel like this team has talent at every level, right? Yeah. All over the place. Grant Delpit, you know, JOK.
Yes.
Miles Garrett. I mean, you know, they had the number one defense last year statistically. You know, you think about it, there's only one way to go when you're number one, and that's backwards. That defensive line, they've got some guys on there with some injuries in this preseason.
Yeah.
They're not really playing yet. They do have some great young talent. Isaac McGuire's looked good. Alex Wright came on last year. There's a lot of things on this team to be excited about and say, no, they should be good, right?
Yeah.
But Denzel Ward's nursing his fifth concussion.
Yep.
Newsom is out, and Newsom, they're not talking about Newsom. He might be out for the year. They're still not saying.
Wow.
I think it's interesting that they're not talking about his surgery and not giving any prognostication. I think that's a bad sign. Like, I just think the vibes around this team right now aren't very good. And if they start off slow because of this, and, you know, with this tough schedule, I don't believe in the mental toughness of this squad because I've never seen it. And I feel like they're a squad that would just fold.
I mean, that's possible. It is possible things could snowball on them if they go poorly. And as you said, yes, I mean, there are collections of players here and there on this team that have very elite talent. I mean, Petonio and Teller is one of the great guard combinations of the 21st century.
They are, but I mean, even in the second half of last year, Teller faded because of injuries.
Yeah.
Joel's old, right? Joel is getting old.
Yeah.
And I worry, you know, his heart is strong as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to worry about a guy with that much mileage on him. Posick at center is going to be fine, right? But we lost two centers already in the preseason, and we had to bring back Harris.
Yeah.
In a trade because you lost your second and third string centers.
Yeah.
I don't know. And maybe I'm too much in the moment. And they come out in this third game and they look great, you know, their preseason game. But I just don't like the way things are looking in terms of injuries, new coaching, new offensive system. I really worry about the mentality of this team and the psyche. But and anyway, enough on the Browns. I think they're going to flame out a little bit. You know, I mean, there's still a team that could win on it in any given week.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be a dangerous team. They're a team that could beat the Chiefs, and then the next week, you know, lose to the Giants, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think they're that kind of team.
Yeah.
Then, you know, so getting back to the division, I've got the Steelers at 7 wins.
Okay.
I think they've lost a step. I don't think they solve anything at quarterback. I think we saw in the last game the preseason game, they chose to play Wilson and Fields. Those two guys played the whole game, and they scored 3 points. And they both looked terrible. I think Wilson's washed. I think Fields is never going to be a thing. I don't think they solved the damn thing. And I don't they're probably losing their center for the season to injury. I don't believe in the Steelers. I think they've got a drama queen at wide receiver in Pickens, a guy I loved coming out of Georgia.
Right.
But he's proven to be an absolute head case. And I think they finally have a losing season under Mike Tomlin. Look for them to bottom out at 7-10 and finish last in the division again. But this time with a losing record. I think Steelers fans are going to have some, some reckoning on where this team is going. You know, that sort of Mike Tomlin bravado and toughness can only carry you so far. So that's how I see the division. I if Burrow's healthy, I see the Bengals, having enough. I think the Ravens are taking a little bit of a step backwards. I think the Browns are going to deflate. And then I think the Steelers are just, they're in a downward trajectory, in my opinion.
Well, again, I've got the Browns as a wild card team behind the Bengals just because in looking at the Ravens roster and looking at roster holes. Now, as you said, the Browns may have more in the way of holes in terms of injuries based on how these things play out, particularly, as you said, in the secondary, potentially. I agree with you on the Steelers, except I think they've upgraded a quarterback with Fields, but again, they foolishly didn't pick up the option on him. I disagree with my BFF, who is a Squealer fan, who thinks they should have kept Kenny Pickett. Pickett's a bum, as we know, Chris. They have upgraded, at least with Fields, but maybe not that much. And again, first year in a new offense, that could be challenging.
Yeah, moving on for Pickett was an obvious thing they needed to do, but I think Wilson's a degrading asset, and I don't think Fields has shown any ability to be able to successfully be a passer of the ball consistently the way you need to be in this league. I don't believe in Justin Fields. I didn't believe in Justin Fields coming out of Ohio State. I still don't believe in Justin Fields. So I just think the Steelers are a fading team that their fan base is going to have. This is going to be a rougher season for them.
Well, ironically, I believed a lot in Justin Fields coming out of Ohio State, and not nearly as much in C.J. Stroud. And look at how that's turned out. But
well, there you go, right? I mean, boy.
Yeah, I mean, Stroud. I think we see that the Ryan Day offense was holding him back, and some of the Ryan Day, tight coaching that they did there, because he clearly is looking a lot better in Houston, no doubt about that. And I think, by the way, to go back to a few points that you had made on some of the various teams here, Browns number one defense last year, but, very, very super asterisky on that in terms of the home-road split, which we saw very violently manifest itself in the playoff game, the collapse at Houston.
Well, that's an example of what I'm talking about when I talk about the mental toughness of this team. I mean, the Browns, it's like you're a mentally weak team that when you go on the road, you're the 31st worst defense, right? But at home, you're number one by a country mile.
Right.
Like, what's going on there? The old adage was defense travels.
Right.
Well, they sure didn't for Cleveland last year.
Right.
I don't remember the last time we saw something like that, where there was such a disparity between home and road in the performance of a defensive unit. I think it's a bit of an indictment on Jim Schwartz. I think the other thing that Browns fans are going to be a little edgy about is that Schwartz is always good in the beginning and then it fades.
Okay.
And I, we might see the luster come off of him this year. Maybe it's next year. He struggles to come up with more than one or two pitches in his repertoire on how he coaches them, how he calls the defense, how he calls different wrinkles in the defense to keep an offense honest. And I think that offensive coaches get a read on what he's doing. He doesn't seem to be able to adjust as the season goes on. And that was a knock on him in Philly. It was a knock on him in Detroit. I think we're seeing it again in Cleveland. And so I worry that defense, despite some really good players from a system standpoint, is going to take a step back if these guys with injuries don't end up playing as much as we think. Guys like Newsom, guys like, you know, Shelby Harris and some others, are they going to get through the season?
That is a super interesting point to make on your part, and something that I hadn't really thought of for this team coming into the season, that I can't quibble with what you said there. The other part as well here, too, to circle all the way back around to the team that you and I are both picking to be the division champs, the Cincinnati Bengals, is we are caveating this. I don't even have to ask you to know that you're caveating this the same way that I am, that this hold-in, if you will, with Ja'Marr Chase right now is not going to last. Because I think I would struggle to pick them as the divisional champions if he was going to be out for a decent chunk of the season. But one thing, and I will say this, and I'll spare you getting into specifics, but you know how I feel about cheap ownership, particularly of teams that I'm a fan of. But with the Bengals, Mike Brown is always going to have that burden to prove that they're willing to do what it takes. And as I was reading some of the stuff today about this situation now, and that, like, the Bengals can actually fine and suspend him, the thought that I would have, the fear that I would have as a Bengal fan, is that they would cynically look at that as a chance to save money and then just bring him back later in the season. Clearly, you and I are believing that he's going to be there for the season or most of it if we're picking them to win the division.
I don't know Chase's representation, but I gotta think he's gonna show up week one to collect those paychecks.
Right.
So I you know, you might want the new contract and the big extension, but you don't want to pass up on the money now.
Right.
And the other part of that I would say, if I was one of his, you know, agents or representatives, is like, look, you want to make yourself available and play not only for those game checks now, but you don't want to suddenly have a reputation that shrinks the marketplace if you're going to move on to another team.
That's
you don't
right.
want other teams going, is this guy a headache? You know, do we want him in the building? Are we going to be looking at the same kind of stuff? You know, I think that's what you're seeing right now. I mean, a lot of teams, like the Browns, ought to be thankful they didn't land Brandon Ayuk.
Yes.
I mean, he has shown himself to be an asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy is a clown. I mean, I'm sorry. He just is. I mean, the Browns had a deal and a contract on the debt on the thing. The Steelers eventually had a contract, you know, and he was trying to force his way to Pittsburgh, and he's pulling back. And does he want to come back to San Francisco after what? He didn't want to play for them anymore. I mean, if I'm looking at that guy, I'm like, I don't want that guy. He strikes me as toxic. I don't want that guy anywhere near my locker room, anywhere near my franchise. Screw him.
Well,
and I think the Browns ought to be like, thank God we didn't sign that guy.
Well, he's really good, but I can give you a long list of guys that he's not. He's not C.D. Lamb. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not Justin Jefferson. He's not Chase. He's not either of the Brown brothers. One might argue he's not even Devontae Smith. We can go on probably even a bit further. He's really good, but he's not on their level, or at least he hasn't proven it yet. Versus
he's acting like he's Justin Jefferson.
He ain't. He could,
and it's like, you haven't shown that yet. Now, maybe his argument is, our system and our quarterbacks don't allow me to be everything I can be. And there might be some truth to that. But, you know, he's not coming off. He's coming off terribly in this thing. Terribly.
Yeah. Yes.
And if I was Ja'Marr Chase's representatives, I'd be like, that's what we don't want to look like. Right? Mike Brown, to your point, is cheap.
Yes.
He doesn't have independent money. Right?
Yes.
The only thing that guy has is an NFL franchise.
Yep.
And he's in a tiny market. He is eternally strapped, right?
Yeah.
Mark Davis fixed his problem by moving to Vegas.
Yeah.
And getting a massive infusion of cash, right?
Yep.
Another guy that was in the same boat, didn't have any other independent wealth. There's a reason why it's helpful to have an owner like Cleveland and the Haslams that are independently wealthy of their franchise, have billions of dollars in wealth and assets, and because of cap manipulation, can basically every year spend 120% of the cap. Right? And that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They are using cap manipulation and magic to basically outspend the rest of the league by about 120%.
Yeah.
Every year. People keep saying, how did the Browns sign all these contracts? It's because they have an owner, for all his flaws, is willing to turn contracts into guarantees and put cash on the barrel head and guarantee, you know, and signing bonuses and willing to front load money and do everything you can to constantly manipulate the cap. Andrew Berry has an owner that allows him to do whatever he wants and to spend money. Mike Brown, to your point, is not that guy.
No, he's
Mike
not.
Brown doesn't have the money. Mike Brown can't sign all those wide receivers. Mike Brown gave Joe Burrow that contract because he had to, but he can't keep spending at that rate. He doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the cash flow. Because as you and I have discussed in previous podcasts, the same reason why the Raiders let their linebacker go. What was his name? He's now with the Chargers. Went to Chicago.
Oh,
the reason.
Mac.
Yeah, Mac. Khalil Mack from Buffalo. The reason they ended up not signing him was because Mark Davis was so cash broke he couldn't put the money for that signing bonus and contract in escrow.
Yeah.
They had to trade him. People didn't understand. Like, how could you let this, you know, Hall of Fame talent, you know, how could you trade him away for, you know, peanuts? And it was like, money.
Yeah.
He didn't have the money. He couldn't put that money in escrow on guarantees on the contract. So he had to trade him. Mike Brown's in the same boat. The reason he sold stadium rights was to create extra cash flow to be able to sign Joe Burrow.
Yep.
So to your point, Bengals fans, I mean, I'm sorry, it sucks, right?
Yeah.
Because even though the NFL has a lot more equity and a cap that makes things a little more fair than, say, baseball, you still have an owner that is, other than the value of his franchise, is not wealthy. And can't put cash on the barrel head again and again, the way a guy like Jimmy Haslam can, the way a guy like Jerry Jones can, the way, you know, some of these other owners.
Yeah.
And that always does put the Bengals at a disadvantage.
Yes. And that's one of those things where, again, but they need to get a deal done because, again, Chase, if he hits the market, I mean, he's going to be probably the best wide receiver on the market in a long, 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 long time. And you're going to see him get an eye-watering deal. Again, unless he really poisons the water with how he handles the situation this year there. And as far as the stuff you're describing with the Browns, all they're doing is cribbing from, ultimately, Gilbert and Griffin with the LeBron era, too. David Griffin, what a magician that freaking guy is. I love that guy so much for his ability to manipulate the cap in the second LeBron era here. Griff was just one of one at being able to do something like that. So the Browns imitating out of that playbook. But again, a very, very interesting division here. An AFC North where I see the Ohio teams being 1-2 in the division. We both have the Squealers at the bottom of the division. And, again, we'll have to see how this all plays out. But thank you for being a part of this one, Chris. And thank you, everybody, for checking out our 2024 AFC North preview in the FDH Lounge.